were studying.
That's a little win, actually.
Yeah.
They lobbied and had that passed right, yeah, at right. the West Virginia legislature to well, what they wanted was to outlaw the practice of inserting sludge underground, because when you're putting it in the ground, maybe it's all permeable, it's all pointed, and people are dying. Especially since about the misinformation, they're trying to tell people it's not toxic. People want to trust the government, so they keep drinking it and showering in it, and like their infants will just die. You know, keep back in the babies. So anyway, so they said, well, let's outlaw this project. And they said, well, this process. They said, well, first, let's study it. And so they said, okay. And so they got a bill passed, and so they have an official like state study. And they did not get funding. They did get funding.
I think they're funded. I think the DEP is doing it.
So it's really neat. I mean, it's like that was like a career for your process. Mm-hmm. Get that study.
But just on one of the conference calls recently, the DEP was like, no one expect to get. And we're like, yes, we do.
Yeah.
So they are going to get actualists. It's just ridiculous, though. The DEP, the Department of Environmental Protection, is pretty much in the pocket of the coal industry.
I don't know if it's worship time.
Three, I think, times a day.
It's just too, I mean, I want everyone's questions to be addressed, but I'm also really interested in your guys' experience, but there's not any sections right now to talk about the forms of money, so you guys are working on this.
Actually, there's going to be a panel tomorrow.
Is there a panel?
Okay. Yeah, I think it's tomorrow. And so we're going to talk briefly on that. I mean, there's a lot of people on the panel, I think.
I'm not really sure, but...
I feel like we're new to this region, and I feel like I need to know a lot more than that. Not so much.
So, okay, I also want to say, they say things like it puts things back in the earth, right? And they do say things like that, and they say things like acid mine drainage. It's like, well, it was in the ground anyway, but it's locked in the ground, and it doesn't come out unless you expose it to air. A lot of stuff, like the selenium, they don't add selenium to valley fills. It's like, it's just in the rocks, but it's in the rocks in a way that it doesn't come out. Like, and the iron, there's iron seeps all over the place, and iron is also toxic in large amounts. It doesn't actually have to be all that large, but.
I said like total cereal.
Exactly, yes. So it's all present there, but it doesn't come out unless it's exposed to air. So when you blow it up and expose it to air and water runs by it, that's when you get the heavy metals that wash out into the water. And that's why, like, just a spring is not toxic, even though maybe running through the same rock, there's no air that's exposed to, so it won't be picked up in the water. Which is something the DEP tries to tell you. Another picture of that. So what does this do? What are the effects of this stuff? There's a good picture. The flooding. This is a little woman, Marie Gonneau's house, and I believe she's lost an acre of land. Just like, it's been flooded out. She does an NPR study right, a valley fill right behind her. And it just floods out constantly. And there used to be this little stream running through her property. Now it turns into this. When it rains. Because the same thing happens when you timber as when you mine, you take away the forest, which will stop and hold the water, and it just all comes down at once. So that's one of the serious effects of this kind of stuff.
So what about the water that's running into those sludge things? I mean, because those...
That's cringe, yeah.
So, I mean, do they have to release any of that so it doesn't flood? Or is it...
You've
got plenty of room, so...
They're supposed to have plenty of freeboard on there, plenty of room. Sometimes they'll... If it's a serious rainstorm, I've heard they'll pump out around, like put a pump up behind right before it gets into the sludge pond and pump it out. around to the front. But these dams seep. They say they're designed to seep, which is like, it's toxic. You're letting it seep. And not only are you aware of it, but you on purpose did that. So they say they're designed that way, and then the evaporation rates, I guess. So I don't know. They're designed to have I don't know if you can really tell in this picture, but there is like 60 feet of. I was asked to do this workshop yesterday night, last night.
And you were asked to do it on Saturday last night.
Today this morning. It is. So I don't have any of my stuff. This is not my computer or my thing or whatever. So there's probably like 60 feet between here and here. And there is a spillway that comes in around here. So if it does get, instead of overtopping, it will just release that stuff right into the river. Like, that's the design.
I had some good pictures of landscapes from post-mining.
Right.
But one thing with the stream system, and they must have, there's this incredibly efficient natural system in Appalachia of dealing with rainwater. Like, it's a rainforest, there's a lot of rain, and so there's all these natural pore space for the water to flow, and one thing that they take away is the places for that water to go. And not only do they pollute on its way towards rain, but sometimes they just completely take away the path. So there's all this water with nowhere to go. And a lot of times what they'll do instead, too, is if you have like a, and you can explain this now, but what is it when you'll see like a pretty much vertical flat, and it used to be a mountain, but now it's just grass. Like, it's just a big, and it's as high as you can see, and it's just straight down, and it's grass. And then right in the middle of it, there's this like sidewalk of gravel, and that's the stream. And that's a reclaimed stream. Like, post-mining, they have these sidewalks of gravel, and, you know, it's just like, you know, 8, 4, 10 feet wide of gravel. And that's the reclaimed courseway for the water.
Yeah.
How long did it last? I mean, like, in the plan of the reclamation plan, like, that's finished.
That's permanent.
You were talking about
actuality.
Yes. Yeah. And I guess my other question too is how long? When did they start doing mountaintop removal and valley fills?
This is the 90s, mid-90s.
Stripping got really powerful with the type of machinery and really magnificently destructive.
Wouldn't you say it's probably the 70s with the big cold boom, and then recently again there's been another cold boom with the more energy and events thing? So with SMACRA, it was once regulated, but it ended up...
That was 79 and...
77.
I have some information about the Connecticut sections, which would enable the valley flood sections, so if you have this similar to the information about that.
But back in the 70s, when there was national attention on the old kind of strip mining, there were some people who wanted to abolish it completely, and other people who said, well, if it regulates it, it'll get rid of the problems. And so the people who were willing to just have it regulated, once it became regulated, then the coal companies just started looking for ways to get around the regulations. There were some loopholes built into the law itself, such as that you could get away from returning it to the actual conquerors, if you could do that anyway, if it was going to be used for public use. So you have mine companies who are saying, oh, well, eventually this is going to be used for, and the percentage is what?
Equal or greater value is what they call it, equal or greater use. And so a lot of times what they actually say is wildlife and fishery use, but it's like, they turn it into, it's basically a grassland. Like Dana was saying, I wish they had a picture of this. Like, so they spray on the, because nothing will grow on a reclaimed site, really. So they'll spray on it this hydro seed, which is the same stuff they use on the side of highways and stuff when they need something to grow real fast. I've heard it'll grow, and if you spray it on a sheet of steel, it'll grow. And that's what they spray, and typically it's non-native grasses, so nothing eats it. And it's fairly useless land. Things don't want to grow on that.
It's possibly not stable, so you can't build on it. You were talking about a story of a prison that became unstable and you had to and the land is just, it's still settling up, you know, and so it's not even stable for the grass. It's just common sense. I mean, you
take off the base part that's been growing and repile gravel.
But there was a major victory just a short while ago in March. We won a lawsuit. This actually only affects West Virginia, which is really strange to me. So the permitting process. There's different groups that permit different parts of the mining. So like the DEP permits the surface mine, but the Army Corps of Engineers permits the valley fills, because the Army Corps of Engineers has to deal with anything that has water in it, basically, or navigable water, so like any surface water, pretty much, is under Army Corps jurisdiction. So the Army Corps has to give out these permits, and the judge said that the Army Corps can't give out any more valley fill permits until there is a study. They do a study that shows that the mitigation requirements, things that they require, actually mitigate the damage caused by the valley fills, which, I mean, in my mind, great, they don't mitigate it at all. It's like that stream is, that Dana was talking about, the concrete spillway, that's considered a mitigation. And it's not, and there's no way that, like, I mean, I guess they could get a bunch of crooked scientists to say that it does, but even so, it's years off before they get that study. So they can't permit any valley fills anymore, which are pretty necessary for the large-scale surface mining. And strangely, even though it's the Army Corps of Engineers, which is a national agency, it only affects West Virginia.
Because it was only a circuit court decision.
Yeah.
For that.
Right.
Federal district.
But it's like, so the Army Corps, which then has to operate under different laws in different states, which is, I don't know, I think it's kind of ridiculous, but whatever. There's also, they put sediment ponds at the bottom of those, and they made those illegal too. The Army Corps can't permit those at the moment anymore either, which is not super necessary, but it's pretty necessary.
What's the difference between a sediment pond and a sludge impoundment?
Sediment ponds are basically to catch sediment that will come off the mine site. So turbidity, like how cloudy water is one of the worst things for, if you increase the turbidity, it's one of the worst things for a river, for a stream ecosystem. So if you, they don't want to increase the turbidity too much, so they put these giant ponds in to catch all the water as it comes off, and all the water's full of sediment because it's all just been exposed by the blasting, and it in theory settles out in those ponds before it's released back into the stream where it's gone.
And it's supposed to be a series of ponds, right?
They sometimes have series of ponds called silt snakes, but those are also illegal, or the Army Corps can't permit them anymore because there's no mitigation. They don't know, there's never been any studies on it. They're just like, yeah, sure, do it. Like, the Army Corps is basically, they've never done anything, they're not based in any science or anything, they're just like, yeah, go for it, do it, whatever. I don't know. Yeah, so two major victories for West Virginia at least, but they're appealing that decision, but still, it's years off.
We can come back to the ecological and just logistical, what I'm talking about is, but I think the sociological is very interesting, particular to Appalachia as well. It's very,
Right, so obviously environmentally destructive, but socially, like, the whole coal industry is destructive to Appalachia. Because they've, like I said before, all the laws are tailored to the coal industry and all the mine industries. So it's a mono economy, and any mono economy is bad news, basically, whether it's, you know, growing nothing but corn, or it's growing nothing, doing nothing but coal mining, it's not really a healthy economy. Like, it'll be healthy for a while, like during the boom time, it's great, and everyone's loving the coals there, and everyone's making a bunch of money. As soon as it you go into bust time, that's it. It's like coal mining was all that was there, and now you know you're out of luck. So that cycle is really harmful to any society, any community.
What you have in addition to the modern economy, then, too, is this sort of historical, almost like colonizer settling social structure. You have sort of like a ruling class and sort of people who scurry around. They're like the natives, and they have a different culture, and they have a different way of speaking, and that's not respected in society, that doesn't have collateral in that society. And so you have this sort of like very much similar to like third world things going on, where you have the colonizers and the colonized too. So, and then you have that with a modern economy, so there's these really interesting things that happen. I mean, I was saying there's, so you look at this and you think, well, historically, West Virginians have been very dependent on their land for survival. Like, culturally, they're in general more aware of the seasons. They live seasonally. They do, you know, they lived off the land, you know, for hundreds of years. They were self-sufficient. And so you would think that these people, not only is their culture, but many times still their livelihood is based off of this. And wouldn't they find it problematic that it's being sort of systematically destroyed, and still yet it's so difficult to find people who are willing to speak out against it because it's very overwhelming brainwashing that's been going on for the last 100 years. Combined, I would say, with some post-traumatic stress syndrome from just the tragedy that was allowed, like in the coal camps, just the sheer miserableness of the life expectancy was so low, and the sickness was so high, and people, were less valuable than mules because you have to buy another mule, you know, and they were told that, you know, up until the 30s and 40s, and then also tragedies like the Buffalo Creek disaster, where 127 people died during the pandemic, and so, you know, where I live is a good 30, 40 minutes from where that happened, but it affects people, you know, like, and psychologically that effect is really intense, and so I feel like you have this sort of collective, just the way it affects your psyche to be dealing with so much tragedy. You have this colonial attitude you're dealing with, and then you have throwing that modern economy into it, where there's not an alternate economy, and it creates this real maelstrom of just very difficult.
I'd like to play the devil's advocate to that, because I see what you're saying, but there's a really long history of resistance in the coal fields.
Definitely.
And with the unions, and I mean, some people in the struggle, the environmental and social struggle, they're not afraid of anything, because they've been through such hell. That they're fighters, they're survivors. So,
yeah.
It's both,
you know, they are, and that's what's amazing about people and about the culture. And it is, it's very individual, yeah, it's very much so. But, the family system, so I think part of it is that, I came into West Virginia working for like education and family systems, and mm-hmm. just see the depth of devastation that it has in our individual families. No, but you're right. I mean, I admire that so much.
But, I mean, and for instance, when they had the lobbying for the Clean Water Protection Act, which would have, to some extent, prevented the dumping of the streams. Boucher, who represents Wise County, which is the coal county in Virginia.
That's where I live.
He wouldn't even talk to us.
Yeah.
Wouldn't even talk to, and I mean, all his constituents, you know, from Wise County make it all the way up, what is that, 6 hours, or more than 6 hours to drive to D.C.,
yeah,
8 hours, and then he doesn't even,
what about Bird?
Is he what? Is he a coal man? He's a coal man.
I mean, the things that Bird and Ray Hall might be good on, but what they're not good on is standing up for people against the interests of the coal companies. And they'll rationalize and say, oh, well, this is economic development. but mountaintop removal, Jack Spadaro, who was a mining inspector who lost his job over the Warren County coal spill that they were talking about, because he wouldn't falsify the reports and say that, I mean, basically they watered down the reports that in terms of liability, and he wouldn't sign on to the report, and he eventually, first they locked him out of his office, and then they finally at least gave him his pension, but it took years. He told me that the ratio of mining jobs to get these thin seam of coal using the equipment which is available to do that to mountaintop removal is 200 regular mining jobs to one MTR job. And he and Larry Bush from Wise County both contend that the narrow seam mining would still provide a good profit for the mining companies, but that's not good enough for them. They want this tremendous
profit. The people they hire to work on strip mines are generally people with specialized knowledge, and so they're not generally people from that community. Although the security guards and the whatever, I mean, are often in the community, but that's another myth of mine.
Well, they're basically equipment operators as opposed to miners.
Yeah. So they say that, oh, this is a mono economy, we have to do whatever we can to support it. And, you know, people are very poor here, but then the people they're hiring for the jobs that pay the most money are not here.
But they've done studies, there hasn't been one in West Virginia that I know of, but in Kentucky County, they looked at Eastern Kentucky, which is that Appalachian portion of Kentucky that looks most like Southwest Virginia and West Virginia. And they looked at counties that had coal, mm-hmm. and they looked at counties that didn't. Both the same steep terrain, nothing much different between the counties. And there was actually an inverse relationship. In other words, the more coal that was produced in a county, the more poverty.
Well, if you think about it, it's the billion-dollar coal fields, right? And yet it's the counties in West Virginia that produce the most coal are the poorest counties in the state, in one of the poorest states in the country. And so, I mean, it's not a shocker. I mean, and it's really funny, like I was at this, like Bill Rainey was talking, and somebody said something like, well, why are the poorest counties in the state, you know, the ones that make the most coal? And he was like, well, we've just got to give coal a chance, make it work, you know? It's a coal had a really good long chance, another 100-year chance, you know, it's still doing the same thing. It's kind of funny. But I don't know.
But the interesting thing about the Kentucky study is that they actually found counties with similar terrain saw this argument that coal is the only thing that you could have. It's just totally bogus. And tell them the thing that you were telling me in terms of the decrease in the capacity to generate wind power in terms of ruining the mountains for other types of power.
Where they
were raiding the mountains, like...
So, we actually had a big study down the mountain across where I live. And it's got really great wind potential. And there's also 3 permits out for it right now. One of them, they already got the permit, the DEP, but like I was saying before, there's a difference between DEP and the Army Corps. So they haven't gotten the Army Corps permit, so they're not doing anything on it. Even though they have the permit, they don't have their valley fill permits, which is fantastic. It couldn't have been better timing for us, like, that close. But once you take down the mountain, you can't, like, it changes the wind patterns. So the wind's not strong enough for a wind turbine anymore. So it'll take it down to class 6 to class 2, or, you know. So,
So what is your proposal or vision of
wind
power? Like what you're saying, you want to obtain a permit for wind power on the mountainside. What does that look like?
What do you mean? What's it?
Like how many?
So, well, the one that they had designed was 220 wind turbines. Pretty big. It'd be like, actually, I think it'd be the biggest wind farm on the East Coast, in the Eastern United States, and it would produce 10% of West Virginia's residential electrical usage.
Would that involve, I mean, what I've seen, you know, people doing wind towers that you have to clear, I mean, would that involve clear cutting the
You strip, you put a road on the ridge, and it basically has to be wide enough for a service truck to get up and down, and wide enough for the turbine to sit, but and then wide enough for a service truck to get up and down. There was one that they're trying to get Greenbrier County that they're going through, and there's a whole lot of outcry against it because there's a lot of wealthy people in Greenbrier County and they didn't want to look at it. It was basically, like, I went to a lot of the hearings and that was their argument. They didn't want to look at it. There's the view sheds, all that. So they, the company that wanted to put it in, they weren't going to use any herbicides. They're just going to, you know, whatever needed to be cleared would be done by hand. They weren't going to, they worked with three hunting fish clubs so like they're going to keep all the land open for hunting and for gathering wild herbs and stuff, which is great. I mean, on the mindset, that's one of the biggest things you can get people on. Like on Doro, like you can say they're going to close that mountain off, you can't hunt there anymore. Even though it's never been their land, it's been Rolling Land Company's land for like 100 years, they still have been able to go up there and hunt. I mean, they'll go up there and kitchen setting and stuff. And they're making all kinds of concessions. They agreed to pay minimum tax there, which, I mean, that's like, I've never heard of that. I think, I don't know if anyone's ever heard of that before, but like, they agreed. Normally it's like a business comes to town and the town says, you won't have to pay taxes for 4 years or whatever.
Yeah.
They said, we'll pay taxes. We'll pay like this minimum tax no matter what we produce. Like, this is like a production tax on energy. So, that was them. And there was like going to be like the most comprehensive bird and bat study ever done on a wind farm out there.
So that got totally defeated?
No, it got, it passed.
It did pass?
Yeah,
it
passed.
Yeah, okay. You were saying it didn't happen.
No.
So the permit was passed for that? Or
yeah.
Yeah. For one in another county?
Yeah.
Oh, the one near his house is still in process.
Right. And there's a permit for coal mining up there right now. There's, we're trying to get people to, because it costs a lot of money. None of us have that kind of money to put windmills up there. So we need investors.
But it's to the point where if they cut every tree up the mountain and put up a windmill, it would be better. Yeah.
But they don't, and there has been, I've seen pictures like that where they have to clear cut the side of the mountain and then there's a windmill and they'd be like, you have to clear cut that, but it just happened that they put up a windmill.
Yes, I think it's
and then they clear cut it.